question.
Okay, okay, he's going to ask his question. He's deferring in favor of you. So your hand went up first. Go ahead, in the back, the dude right there, yeah.
I know you don't really write for this as a whole, but if you could choose one of your books to be seen on the big screen, what would you
choose? If I could choose one of my books to be seen on the big screen, what would I choose? I would choose Mistborn. Definitely choose Mistborn. The reasoning for this is I don't think Way of Kings would adapt to a movie. Yeah, maybe a television show. Who knows? But it just won't adapt. Mistborn would adapt. Mistborn adapt really well, I feel. And so, so those are up there. I'm kind of close to Hollywood. We're not there, but you know, we're close enough that we can smell it. If your uncle is J.J. Abrams, or Joss Whedon, go tell Uncle Joss. Hey, Joss, I know you're having fun with the Avengers, but you know what else is cool? Mistborn. I would really like to see that. And I'm trying hard. For those who don't know, the auction lapsed, and I posted on my website. And so I met with some producers before I came here today, and I'm meeting with others, and I'm going to try and pick someone who I really feel can actually get the thing made. So you can come up and get one of these things. I am going to do a reading. Oh, yes, thank you. So, yay, clapping for the Q&A being over. Everyone's so excited. No, you're not. You know what? I just promised the last one. I'll have to look in my bag and see if I have any more. I think the thing, let's see. What am I going to read? We'll open up Dropbox and see what's see what's striking at me. I did start writing on a new novella just like right after I finished Firefight, which is a sequel to Steelheart, which is done. Yay! After I finished that, I started just writing a little novella. I didn't finish it, but I got a few pages in just to try out something I've been thinking about doing for a while. So I think we are going to go ahead and read that, if I can figure where I stuck that. There it is. Yeah, it's right there. Okay. So this is based off of one of the very cool ideas I've had for a magic system for a long time, in which magic is granted by bacteria and viruses. You catch a disease, and the disease has evolved to give you a magical talent for a short time while you have the disease, in order to kind of keep you alive and encourage you to spread the disease. And then when you get over the cold or whatever you've gotten, you lose that power. Which is really a cool idea to me. And the idea of what you would do with that, and what culture and society would do with that. So, I'm going to go ahead, and I'm going to read that. Iliel was awakened by the whispering of the dead child who followed him. Death and die, death and die. The girl's words were often gibberish, though usually he could make out a few of them. Tonight, what she said felt eerie, made the whispering in the darkness sent a shiver up his spine. Iliel sat up in his cot, realizing that he'd fallen asleep in his uniform again, and looked across the darkened room, seeking out the child. There, she hid in the shadows by the wooden bin that held his canes. Small, maybe 4 years old, she had long, straight blonde hair that hung down by her face, ears peeking out like rocks in the sand. She met his eyes. "That's his eye," she whispered. It would be nice when this particular echo passed. Iliel rose, tugging at his rumpled jacket. Still have a soldier to feel ashamed at its state. His father would have had Iliel's head if he'd seen such a uniform. Climbing from the bed, Iliel took the cane from beside it for support, then walked out onto the balcony. He put his back to the dead child. She was a figment, an echo, or a side effect from an incubation he'd done a few years back. It was so long ago that he was losing hope that the echo would fade. He might be stuck with this hallucination for good. He stepped out onto the balcony, using the cane by habit, though he was currently strong enough that he didn't need it to walk. He was recovering from his incubation 2 months back, the grind of that one having finally worn off. In fact, he was probably too strong. He'd been getting too much sleep lately. He'd been eating too well. He needed to maintain a certain level of physical weakness so he'd be open three incubations, assuming he wanted to remain effective at his duties. And he did want to remain effective, for his own reasons, if not for the core itself. Outside on the balcony, the sky burned. It smoldered high above, deep red line, the color of a serpent's tongue, glowing like rifts in the air. The magma cast a warm red light across the city of Suimak. As always, the air smelled faintly of smoke, though he only noticed it when he was first stepping out of the building into the open air. He knew, logically, that the burning place he saw above was actually the ground. He knew that Suimak blew in the air, right? City reversed, one of the few bastions of life left in the burning land. Ilyel was the one who was upside down, as were all the city's inhabitants. It didn't feel that way to him. He lived here too long. Upward was toward the burning ground of the land. Downward was toward the sky and the sun. Things he never saw except on the rare occasion when he was called upon to visit the farms and orchards that grew on the city's sunward side. Ilyel stood for a time, holding to the cast iron railing, staring up at swaths of burning ground high above. Molten rivers, a land destroyed. A warning flag raised to them all. Omnipresent, undeniable, the city itself slept beneath the scarlet glare, vague and red, sleeping. Death and die, the girl whispered from behind. She crawled into the balcony doorway, now crouched there, looking up at the air. Ilyel glanced at her. Kareem Gage, you're a creepy one, he whispered. What must I do to be rid of you? Death and die, she whispered. He tapped his finger on the railing, then strode back into his quarters, splashed some water on his face, and checked the sword blade of his walking cane. Seconds later, he was out the door. 2. The offices of the Corps didn't look like a police station should. And police stations were supposed to be box-like things, stable and functional, designed to indicate to all who visited that this was not a place where nonsense was permitted. Those ornamented columns, etched with the silver serpents of Mokdi lore, those golden doors, those soldiers with ridiculous feathered helms, those were not the symbols of efficient law-keeping. They were quite the opposite. The Yell walked up the steps and passed the guards, who were at least armed with functional halberds and 2 flintlock pistols at their belts. They saluted him by lifting fists to their sides. As an incubator, he outranked everyone in this building except the ones who actually mattered. The Yell felt a moment of lightheadedness at the top of the steps and was forced to stop, gripping the railing and leaning on his cane. So he wasn't completely well. Good. Another god stepped to help him. Weakness was expected of incubators, one of the marks of their station, and being near them at the wrong time could be dangerous. One needed only look upward at the burning land to be reminded of how dangerous. With his head cleared, he continued up the steps, cane clicking, and passed the men without returning their salute. He stopped just inside the building, however, coming alert. Motion. Lesser watchmen called him to one another in the large room, aides carrying stacks of paper. Reddened eyes and yawns accompanied both groups. Many of these people had been called up unexpectedly despite the early hour. Ilyel? A woman rushed up to him through the bustle. Kuo wore the yellow and blue uniform of an incubator, like his own, but better fitting and far better kept. You look like ash, man, she said. Are you still on the grind? Ilyel looked back at the hall, noticing the motion of bodies. Nobody was going into the weapons locker, though the riot gear had been set out at the side. Large metal shields and large swords coated in rubber from the trees on the sunward side. They were getting ready for something, but he didn't know what. A prophecy, he guessed. I still can't believe they called you up, Kua said. You deserve some relaxation after. I will visit Petsipa, Ilyel said, striding through the room, leaving Kua behind. He tried not to let himself be carried away in the chaos. The event he'd been waiting for would come eventually, but this might not be it. Petsipa made prophecies with some frequency. That was why the Corps maintained her, and why she carried her terrible burden. It was difficult not to feel tense, however, in the room's frenzy. Nearby, a scribe turned and accidentally knocked over an hourglass, smashing it to the floor, spraying sand across it. He spared the glance. Sand always drew his attention, but otherwise ignored it, focused on a set of doors at the back of the room. This must have been an alarming prophecy indeed to cause such a fuss. The guards here at the doors were even more flowery, with feathers on their shields after an old-fashioned style almost nobody used any longer. The murals might depict men in simple wraps and women in nothing above the waist but necklaces. Those days had long ago passed, centuries before Ilyel's times. The Mokdi people were as modern a one as he'd ever known. His own brownish tan skin and dark hair blended in well enough here, that he could have passed for Mossy himself, assuming he didn't open his mouth. That was something he did better at when he'd been younger. These guards let him pass too, and no scribes or watchmen beset the hallway beyond. Only incubators were allowed in here. Unfortunately, while they presented a more solemn group, it was no less unruly in its own right. Some 24 of them clumped together at the other end of the darkened hallway like a clot of hair clogging a drain. Yale strode forward, passing doors on either side, set with glass. The small, well-lit rooms showed in the glass that they weren't exactly cells, just like their occupants weren't exactly prisoners. They just couldn't leave. With the hallway dark and the rooms lit, each door's window glowed like they looked into other worlds. Other worlds inhabited by the sick. It was hard to think of it that way anymore after so long in this land. The people in those rooms weren't simply ill. They were lay incubators. Their job was to live with those in those little rooms, bearing their afflictions until they started to recover. Whereupon, another individual could be brought in to catch their malady and take their place, ensuring the incubation itself didn't vanish. It was good money, assuming you didn't mind the discomfort, which could range from the snivels to deadly fevers, depending on the incubation you agreed to receive. And of course, there were other benefits. In one room he passed, the occupant, a young man, hovered in the air reading a book. In another, an elderly woman tapped on a cup, idly changing the color of its liquid inside with each tap. In Sui Ma, indeed, upon this entire land, every disease also granted a special capacity. That ability lasted as long as the ailment did. Many of these blessings were minor, while others were grand. Some few were very, very dangerous, and hence the existence of the incubators themselves. All right, I'm going to stop there. So if you can tell from the rough chart, this is a rough draft. It's the first draft. Oftentimes in my first drafts, what I'm trying to do is kind of lay down the world and the character for myself. And then there'll be some very careful trimming as I move forward. But hopefully someday I'll actually be able to finish that story. It was really cool to write like 5 pages of it, which I just read to you. I have it outlined, but time is tight. So we are going to move on to the signing portion, but I have a few things I want to announce first. The first one is, I don't mind people want pictures. Pictures are awesome. You don't have to take one. They take some time, so to speed them up, I'm going to ask for you to hand your camera to this woman right here. Yep, are you the camera person? Right here. So hand your camera, then get in place in front of me, leaning down, or to the side, and she's going to count to three and take your picture. I'm going to start signing. You'd be surprised at how much time I sit there staring at a camera, and this is probably going to take a number of hours if you haven't been here before. And so if I can speed it up for all of you, I certainly want to do the picture. So while I'm signing, she'll count to three, I'll look up, we'll snap the picture, I'll go back to signing, and then chat with you. So if you're going to do that, let's do it that way. There'll be someone here for you to give your camera to. The other thing to warn you is, you gave out around 200 wristbands, you said, and so I generally move at about 50 people an hour, okay? So we're looking at 4 hours for this signing. It probably will go faster. I actually go a little faster than that, but we're at 8 o'clock right now. I would be surprised if we got done before 11. It's possible. Sometimes, we just move along at a fair clip. But if you've got a higher number, if you wanted to go, say, visit the cafe or go to a restaurant, what time do you guys lock the doors here?
11.
So as long as you're back, yeah, you may want to check to make sure, but, I can guarantee that I'm not out of here by 9:30. Guarantee, okay? And 10 o'clock is highly unlikely. If you want to pop your head back in, if you've got a late number, go to dinner for an hour and a half, pop your head back in at 9:30 and see how we are. You're perfectly welcome to do that, okay? Don't sweat it. I promise I won't be gone before 9:30. Absolutely promise. So you don't have to stress. You've got an hour and a half for dinner or for whatever. You could probably even catch a movie if the timing were right, and things like that. The last thing I want to do is I want to give a round of applause to Barnes & Noble. We're book people. We love books. And I want to thank the bookstore for having us here. It is sometimes cheaper to get your books elsewhere and then bring them in and get them signed, but some of the reasons elsewhere can sell books as cheaply is they don't have to do this. Now, granted, she did tell me that Barnes & Noble members got 40% off of this book, So it's hard to find it much cheaper than that, particularly since you can grab it right from them. So keep in mind that, that you can get them very cheaply here too, but at the same time, if you brought your book in from somewhere else, I would encourage you to, you know, look around and see if there's anything else here you want. It doesn't have to be one of my books, but something from the cafe. If you do want one of my books, they do, this day they have a few copies of Emperor's Soul left, which is my short novella that, that won the Hugo. Thank you. It is, many people consider it my finest work, so you can find that. They do have the exclusive editions of Steelheart. They have some of the backlist of my Wheel of Time books. They have all sorts of fun stuff that you can pick up, even a couple of Reckon Assist, I heard. And so you can get those, and I'm happy to sign those. Three personalizations, first time through the line, and then as many other signatures as you want. So a maximum three. You don't have to get any other personalized. We are going to post at the line also, so we'll be handing Post-it. Please get a Post-it on each book you want signed, with each book you want a name in. And on a hardcover, stick it. Well, let me show you. Right here. In fact, you can slap your book. They'll probably be doing this, but stick it in here. Don't stick it on this side because that's where I sign your name. And so then I just have to like move it and stuff. And I suppose I can do that. But anyway, thank you guys so much. You're awesome. I'm going to talk to everyone. You can have a question, whatever. Thank you for coming.